Hello, everybody. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This is a one-on-one episode I've recorded with Jennifer Tress. Jennifer is the author of the book You're Not Pretty Enough, the woman behind the website You're Not Pretty Enough, and a fantastic performer and author. You can buy her brand new book, You're Not Pretty Enough, right now on Amazon.com and in bookstores and all over the place. You can read about her in the current issue of Marie Claire magazine, and you will be able to read about her in this Sunday's edition of the Washington Post. Jennifer is an old friend. She's been on the show before. She will be on our show again, this time at the Kennedy Center. But before we do any of that, here is a pretty long interview with Jennifer about her book, her website, and a little bit of everything else. Thanks so much for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show.
I met you about 3 years ago. Is that correct?
Yes.
You were on a great bill at a furniture store.
No.
No?
Was that where we met?
I thought we met at...
Yeah, it was. Oh, at Danny's thing.
I saw you do a show in the back of a furniture store that I don't think exists anymore.
Yes. Go Mama Go.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was in like early 2011, so two years ago.
Yeah, 10? The Sarah Benicasa show.
The Sarah Benicasa show. Yeah. And what were you doing on that show? Do you remember?
I was telling my You're Not Pretty Enough story.
Yeah, that's how I remembered you.
Long form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's come full circle.
It has.
Because now you have a book that's out right now.
That's right.
Called You're Not Pretty Enough.
That's right.
And it's weird that you are smiling while you're saying these things, because without horrible abuse, you wouldn't have a book deal.
It's true. It's funny because it's so long ago. So, and I think you need that length of time
of
between
course.
Your experiences and like talking about them authentically, because you have enough distance to be like, I can throw some black humor around this and find some parts funny where I didn't before.
How long did it take?
Me to write that story?
Yeah.
Fully 3 years.
So 3 years to write a story. Now let's do the timeline. Right now it's 2013.
Yes.
It's August?
Yes.
That sounds right.
Yes.
And your book came out this week.
Yes.
Okay. When did the thing in that story happen?
1996.
1996. Let's bring the listener to 1996. Yeah. You're currently married in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you?
23.
You're 23. Shit. Yeah. All right, cool. So your 23-year-old wife in the suburbs?
Yes,
in the suburbs of Cleveland. And you have a husband?
Yes.
And it's going not so great.
Exactly.
Is that fair to say?
Very true. After 5 years of dating.
Yeah.
Not suddenly, but it makes a drastic shift.
Yeah. The 7-year itch came a little early.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, your husband is a new friend.
Yeah.
Some might say.
Yes.
And in a way, you have a new friend.
Somebody said you got a new friend.
Yes. And then Robin was not... Was Robin born yet?
Yeah,
no,
Robin
was alive. She was alive.
She was, and she was just about to put out that Show Me Love album.
Oh, God. Robin's pretty old, too.
Yeah.
I just called you old. I'm
hey,
sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
I take it.
You know what I mean?
I don't mind.
I'm 30. I'm drinking from an owl mug. Anyway. So in 1996, you're married, you're 23. God, that's so young.
That is.
And your husband is a new friend. I'll let you take it from here. What happens next? I'm assuming we can tell this story.
Yeah.
This has been out for a
yeah,
while.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So she is a intern in his office and is, you know, like a year younger than me. So it's like,
yep.
He's still the younger woman.
Yeah.
And they started... spending a lot of time together.
Yes.
And basically I found out they had an affair.
Yes.
And,
sorry if I sounded excited.
No!
Yeah, they did.
No,
it was great.
No, I did. I had suspected it for months, though.
Yeah.
And, there was a lot of, like, you know, I was definitely the cuckold in that, like, scenario, right?
Yeah.
And, but I felt there was a break in there, and the whole You're Not Pretty Enough came from a big fight that we got in one night.
Yeah.
So...
Which is pretty self-explanatory of what happened. When that's the title of the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting because I feel like that's the least interesting part of that particular story.
Okay.
Because so with the You're Not, you know, Pretty Enough thing, we got in this huge fight, and I said, why? You know, it was after nights and nights of him not coming home or coming home very late.
Well, yeah, so how late is late?
3 in the morning.
How do you get away with that?
You
did he work in? See, I was a bartender, so yeah. If I showed up late, I could be like, I was at the bar because I was at the bar.
You manipulate the scenario, and remember, we didn't have cell phones back then, so it's like,
wouldn't it be harder?
Hey,
to be out
back in the old times.
But wouldn't it be harder to stay out until 3 a.m. without a cell phone?
No, because you can say stuff that happened. You can sort of come up with your alibi on the fly before you even come home. What sounds good at this point? I went out with friends. I didn't work. I worked till 9.
Okay, I worked till 9.
You didn't catch me because I was always, I didn't want to check my voicemails, and I was always away when you tried to call.
But even if I worked till 9, there's still a 6-hour gap to fill. And you're in the suburbs of Cleveland. You're not in Manhattan.
Well, in the suburbs of Cleveland, you have a lot of fucking bars.
But can't you, at a certain point, do you start calling bars?
Mm-mm. Or do not who I am. No.
Okay.
I just know he's avoiding me. He's not wanting to spend time with me.
Okay.
So I'm not the person that will chase that down. I will chase the person down, and I will, like I did to him, what is happening? What are you doing? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
But I won't chase. But ironically, what started cluing me in is that I went to a bar one night when he said he was going to be out later somewhere else and found him there with that girl.
Yes.
And it really felt like it was an immediate, like, you are encroaching on a date feeling. Like, immediate, like, they both sort of scrambled, and she, like, sort of, you know, went for her wall, and was like, and I saw her clearly mouth, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I just was like, it was an autopilot moment where I was just like, I kept advancing towards them, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm, and I walked up, and he was very manipulative.
Oh, yeah.
So he was just like, I was just about to call you.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, and you have selective hearing when you're young and immature.
Of course.
And want to hear what you want to hear.
Of course. Now, this is 96 still. It wasn't like a one-time event, one-time experience where you met this woman and that was it.
Right.
More happened.
Right.
What is the more?
So, the more is we had actually met a few times, but and the behavior got worse.
Yeah.
And so, I just decided at one point, you know what, I don't have any proof that he's done anything wrong, but he's still treated me like shit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go move in with a friend for a while.
Okay.
I remember the day I told him I was at my office, and he said, "Wow, you clearly don't know how to handle relationships, do you?" And I just thought,
of course, he's projecting his failures onto you.
Exactly.
Of course, yeah.
So I am so frustrated.
Cool, man.
You guys are amazing.
You guys are the best.
They're really great that way.
We're the best.
So. I was obsessed with knowing the truth at that point. Just like, just give it to me.
Yeah.
It's like, I imagine how, and this, that's a terrible analogy. I'm not going to go down there. But I was like, I want the truth. And so I thought, there's somebody else who knows it. And
yeah.
I felt that he had pulled away from her.
Yeah.
He was a little more into me. And I thought, he's pulling away from her. So I took a chance on a hunch and called her. And she had gotten a new job by that point.
Uh-huh.
And she picked up the phone, and I just said, hey, Hey, Charlotte, air quotes.
Yeah.
Charlotte.
Her name isn't Charlotte. Is it Charlotte?
It's not Charlotte.
Oh, it should be Charlotte. So is it Charlotte because it's an NBA city and her name is really like Portland? No, maybe? Brooklyn Nets lady?
Yeah,
no,
that would be amazing, though.
Brooklyn Nets lady?
No, I wish I was that clever in my naming.
Charlotte. Names. Is she from Charlotte?
No.
Why is it Charlotte? You get to pick a Sex in the City?
No.
Is this a guessing game? Or?
No, there's no. You're not gonna go down that rabbit hole.
Okay, fine, fine,
how
fine,
that
fine,
happened?
Fine. So you get a hold of Charlotte,
and I say, I'm not. Listen, it's Jen. Mm-hmm. You know me. You know what the deal is. I'm not mad at you. You didn't
really
marry me.
Weren't married at
I
her?
Wasn't.
Really?
I was in the beginning, but when I was making that call, I was so like, just give me the truth. I'm not. You didn't marry me. Just please meet up with
this
me.
This is early in 96 this happens?
So this is then late 1996. So it's
this
still
is,
96.
It's
yeah.
still, this is all within a year.
Yeah.
This is around Christmas time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So Christmas 96, what happens with Charlotte, you, and... Of course, it's the ex-husband now.
Yes.
The ex-husband.
Yes.
What happens?
We meet at a bar. Charlotte and I meet at a bar.
Yep.
And she tells me everything. It turns out we sort of like each other and get along. And
well, it makes sense. He's got a type.
Yeah. So
that's good. It'd be horrible if you hated her.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how I would have felt about that. Wow, that's really weird to think about, actually. But... she told me everything, and I believed everything because she told me I knew he was married, and I went for it anyway. So I was like, well, at least you're being authentic.
What is it? What's her end game? Did you ever think about that?
Oh, that she wanted him to leave me.
To marry her.
Yeah.
To repeat the same baby for one person.
She was in love with him. Yes.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. I genuinely understand that. But why? Because he's obviously going to do it again.
But you don't think that when you're in the throes of that chemical reaction,
the
right?
throes of the chemical reaction, they're in an office. I mean, it's not a sexy place.
No, but it's a sexy thought because it's taboo
because he's
and forbidden.
Stable?
No, because he's married.
Exactly. She's trying to marry into, she's trying to take stability.
Yeah. But she, you know, you're not, you think you're, anybody's thinking rationally when they're having an affair?
I think.
Nobody's thinking rationally.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Okay. Okay.
They're not. They're in the throes of that shit and right. whatever that turns on
yeah.
for them.
See, I understand this more because of the ages.
Yeah.
23, yeah, I get it. 22, yeah. I get it. But like 33, yeah. 32, it's like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he was at that point almost 30.
What? Wait, wait, I thought you were dating for 5 years.
Yeah, he was 4 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah. So
wait.
He was almost 30 when this was going on.
Okay. Wait, so
yeah,
when
no,
did you
yeah.
meet? That doesn't make sense. When
yeah.
did you meet?
We met when I was in college. I was a freshman. He was a graduating senior.
Of grad school or regular?
Regular.
Okay, so you were 18.
Yes.
And he was 22, 23?
Mm-hmm.
So he was like still like a 5-year senior.
Yes.
Good for him.
Yeah.
That's a that's almost illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was a little older.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he knew what he was doing, but she, clearly he was, you know. Anyway, she and I met up, and I. So then we started talking. Really, you know, when she, I felt like, okay, she's being authentic with
yeah.
me. Like I, and I wanted the truth. You just kick into that.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Tell me more. And she told us he had bought us the exact same Christmas presents. Like she told
yeah.
me, and we just laughed about it. We were like, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
So it was a weird bonding thing, and then at the end, you know, it was like, okay, it's time to go, and she said, you know, it'd be really hilarious as if we went and confronted him together right now. Like, you have been pretty cool, and you're not mad at me, I can tell. Like, let's go nail this motherfucker.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's an amazing idea, and that's what we did, and we walked in. It's the weirdest thing, walking into your own home.
Yeah.
With your husband's girlfriend,
yeah.
and he's right there at the refrigerator, and it's a real like it's a real Chris Hansen moment.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and did he like? Was it stereotypical? Like, did he drop a jar of mayonnaise?
He was literally his face was in the refrigerator, and he literally was like, "What the?" You know, it was
yeah.
like one of those whole. Is this happening? I was like, "Yeah, this is really happening."
What did you do at that point?
It was like we were a comedy routine at that point. I was like, "You're nailed, motherfucker!" You know, like just went off, and you know, you told her you loved her, and she said, "He said I never said that." And she said, "I heard the love, I heard the you, and I heard the I." And I was like, "Oh, it's a good one." So it was like, yeah. And so he's like, "What should I do?" And I said, "You should go pack a bag and leave." And I remember he went to go dial somebody on speed dial, and he accidentally dialed my mom right now.
Oh shit. Did your mom know about this?
No.
Were you venting to her?
No,
oh, shit.
She had no idea it was
Were you
going
talking
down.
To anybody at the time?
Yes.
Okay,
a
that's
a friend
good.
Of mine
that's
who
good.
I went and did a shot with before I even met
yeah,
Charlotte.
That's fair.
And then she came right after
yeah.
and met me after it all sort of went down.
Do you still talk to Charlotte?
I hope this book will help me find her, because the interesting part is that she really helped me through it. He wouldn't talk to me about the affair or anything. You know, he wouldn't talk to me about it, and she did.
Really?
I would call her. I called her after this incident several times.
No answer?
No, she always answered the phone.
Oh, really?
She always, if I had to leave a message, always called me back. And I would just, it took me a while to get from that point to the actual divorce, because he didn't want to get divorced. It was all me.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is 96. When does the divorce happen?
97.
97. Okay,
yeah.
So it was within a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
but it took me a little while to, because he was manipulative. And
yeah,
it took,
of course.
You know, it took me a little while to get the courage up to actually go.
Why were you in the suburbs of Cleveland?
I'm from Cleveland.
Okay. So it was, you're from there.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't move for him or something?
No.
Like that.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you leave Cleveland?
Because I'm from there.
Okay. That makes sense. I've been there once. I can't talk shit.
I love going back, though. It's a great city.
To visit?
Yeah. Yeah. Because my parents still live there.
That's nice.
And I have to say, Cleveland is a major gastro like mecca right now.
That's
because
what everyone thinks of Cleveland, gastro pumps.
No, it's really, there's a lot of restaurants that open
yeah.
around there, because it's a cheap place to open
a
restaurant
place.
And yet there's a lot of chefs, and you have the
Yeah.
Huge market there, all fresh produce and meats and like everything. True. So,
speaking of your parents, in addition to this horrible instance, you have some drawings that you've done on stage before that correspond to some t-shirts.
Yes.
This is an audio podcast. Please explain what I'm talking about.
These are the sex papers.
Sex papers.
That my mother feels endlessly like thrilled that they've gotten the, you know, legs that they have, I suppose. So when my mom was pregnant with my younger sister, I was about four and a half, and I asked her where do babies come from, and she, being a hippie and a real like feminist, was like, this is an honest question, we need an honest answer. And so she pulled out all these diagrams and pictures and explained it very clinically but also very openly to me. And after this conversation, I, according to her, marched upstairs and locked myself in my room for 2 hours and then produced what we call the sex papers, which are, you know, construction paper of multicolors and marker, and like their weird 4.5-year-old version of what sex would be. So one is like two people sitting across from each other smiling naked, smoking cigarettes.
That's a great thing.
It just says sex.
Do you smoke cigarettes?
I did.
Yeah.
And I still occasionally have one. Yeah, it's with the drinking.
Of course. No, I understand completely. I'm just saying, I no need to do that. No one does that anymore.
I know. Since I've
been smelling, smoking a cigarette.
I know. That's
hard
a thing.
To find. You can't
even
go to find. You can't do that anymore.
No, it's like, but it was such a classic tableau,
yes.
right? Of like, after you're done doing it, you reach over to the nightstand and grab a cigarette, and then your partner shares it with you if you're really intimate.
That's nice.
It is nice.
That's a nice
idea.
It's
a good visual.
I can't do that.
Too.
That's not possible in my life.
You can do that.
I live in an apartment. I will get kicked out. I have cats. I feel bad. I can't do that. You can't even go to a hotel and do that.
No, you're right.
It's a weird thing.
It is a weird
thing. I blame Obama's America. Your parents are still together.
Mm-mm.
No, they're not. Okay, I'm sorry.
No.
That's
okay.
Too personal.
It's not.
Were they together when you were four?
Yes.
When you got the sex papers?
Yeah, they divorced when I was seven
remained
pretty good friends.
Okay, do you think that's why you got married so young?
I think
it's part of it.
It's part of it, yes. And I also think at that time, in that place, in Ohio, in the mid to late 90s, you just get married. That's what you do.
You weren't young or old. I think you were like probably
average age.
The average age.
Really, literally the average age at that point. It's like what you did. You know, we had dated for 6 years, so it was probably the 7-year age.
It might have been.
And
well, the ham is like 14.
Man. Yeah, so, you know, I totally lost my train of thought there. Yeah, it's just what you did.
Of course.
Was like, that's the next step.
Yeah. What were you doing at the time? You mentioned that you had a job at the time.
I was the marketing manager for a fairly large nonprofit visitors bureau.
Okay.
In Lorain County.
So you needed to be there.
Yeah. Lorain County is just west of Cleveland. It's where Oberlin College is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you move, though? I know it's because you said you're from Cleveland, but like,
why
you
did I move to
DC? Why did you move in general from Cleveland? Yeah.
From
you seem
Cleveland
to have a decent
to DC.
Job.
Yeah. Oh, I was, you know, pretty driven. And so I got into consulting in the, 97 about, and did really well. And a woman that I worked with a lot in the DC office, I was traveling here about once every week or so, once every 10 days. And she just said, why don't you just move here?
That makes sense. What exactly is consulting? And I'm not trying to be mean.
No,
don't know what that means.
Don't, because it's completely abstract.
Okay.
There is way different consulting. What I do is what's called sort of strategic organizational development consulting.
Okay.
So what that means is executives usually level will come to you and say, something is not working.
Okay.
We're not getting what we should out of this. We don't know why, though. Can you come in and assess like what's happening with our organization?
Okay.
And then give us some recommendations on how to turn this issue around.
So if I'm like the owner of Foot Locker, and I'm like, we're moving everything but Reeboks, like you'll come in and be like, maybe if you put the Reeboks over here, like what would you do?
No, my issues would be more around like, you know, people and processes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like, I can't get my staff motivated.
Okay.
Or I have some really, you know, outstanding people, but they don't know how to be leaders. Or, you know, and that's affecting our ability to meet our mission.
Okay.
You know, it's...
So you're trying to find the right fits for people, in a way.
Yeah, I'm trying to find
motivations.
A solution to an organizational problem.
okay.
a systemic organization.
The reason why I keep asking about it is, like, this doesn't seem like your dream. It's not a bad thing. It seems like you enjoy it.
Consulting?
Yeah.
It's not my dream.
Okay. It's a good gig, though, right?
It's a great gig.
It's a great gig. And yeah. It'll let you do the thing you're passionate about.
I'm a problem solver. I'm very driven.
So how does this gig inform the writing and inform the storytelling and everything else that you're actually more passionate about?
How does it inform that?
Or does it? Is it totally different?
No, it informs it when... It became a big informer when I decided to self-publish.
Okay.
Because to do... Not everybody should do that.
Okay.
And unless you have a major plan mm-hmm. and a vision mm-hmm. and, how you get there
yeah.
and people who are going to market this for you and, like, all this stuff, you're not going to be able to do that. So I applied all these consulting things mm-hmm. that I do for my clients onto yeah. myself. And I think I'm very successful at this. I'm going to be very successful at this.
Seems tired.
It's incredibly tiring. Yeah.
Do you find it more rewarding, or is that just some BS?
I find the reward is happening now after 5 years of work.
Okay. Well, are you talking about financially, or are you talking about just satisfaction, like general well-being?
The satisfaction. And I'm hoping, mm-hmm. I've sort of targeted, I get to choose my consulting gigs now.
That's nice.
So,
you going to do a book tour?
Yes.
Are you building it around consulting gigs as well?
No, I will be done with consulting when I head out on the book tour.
Really?
Most likely.
When is the book tour?
Fall to, Jan.
So
fall
in like
through,
2 months.
I think in January I'll be completely done, and I'll have a threshold where I'll significantly
really?
Decrease through
there's
the end
some,
of the year.
So there's some stuff going on that we probably shouldn't talk about that's exciting that's
yes.
going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Please take offense to this. You're a very pretty woman.
Thank you.
Your book's called You're Not Pretty Enough.
Yes.
People get upset with you when they see that it's not an ugly person that wrote a book called You're Not Pretty Enough.
Super infrequently. It's
okay.
rare.
Okay.
Because I think what people do first is look into who I am and what I'm about. And if you go to my site, it's pretty easy to
figure
out.
Yeah, it's a good site.
You know, what's happening
yeah.
with that and what happened. And when they don't, I explain it. So I,
is that why there's a photo of the younger version
yes.
of you on the cover?
Yes.
To get away from that question?
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of I've been there.
Yeah, okay.
We all have those moments
yeah.
and I've been there. It's sort of a visual.
I remember seeing that at first show, that Sarah Benincasa show. I remember seeing you and a lot of people be like, why is she on the show talking about this? Like,
right.
We're used to, it, for the listener at home, it was in a gay run, like antique/furniture stop. And everyone that performed that night was either gay and talked about like horrible things of like being abused as a gay person or something like that, or like someone that had obviously either just lost a lot of weight or was like something, there was something that made it like artsy. And then here you're a very stereotypically pretty woman, like that movie, and it was like, what is she gonna just like tell us like how hard it is to get a martini somewhere? And then it wasn't, it was very
yeah.
good.
Thank
that's
you.
Why I bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
That's an offensive question.
It's not.
It's an offensive question. It categorizes you as a certain type of thing.
I think that's part of the conversation I'll be having on college campuses, Brandon,
yeah.
is this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I've had two sort of, answers to that. One is even pretty girls,
mm-hmm.
Have things that happen to them where they don't feel that way,
mm-hmm.
And are told that. And then the other part is that I think beauty is really only a very momentary power thing.
Okay.
Because what is as equally as powerful in the moment maybe is knowledge, skills, engagement, intellect, right? And so after a while, you do really give up on that pretty thing. Like when you're talking to somebody for 5 minutes, you sort of let go of the looks thing.
You do?
You do.
You don't
realize it, but you do.
I don't.
You don't think
no,
you do?
I'm...
You don't think you enjoy talking to somebody if they're really cool and engaging?
Yeah.
As, it doesn't matter if they're good looking or
oh,
not.
Oh, it totally matters.
If
it's not a good thing or a bad thing, but it
really?
Informs... Oh, God, yes,
to
absolutely.
You.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think it informs every single thing that's ever happened to that person.
What about a... No, I mean, I'm talking about you.
Yeah,
when you're
me.
Talking
when I'm
to...
talking to somebody... Yeah, I think, like, that person got here because of X, Y, and Z, and one of those factors is that. Same with gender and race.
Yeah, one
I,
of those
never
factors.
Never goes away. Yeah,
right.
So it's always on the
but
table.
But it can't... It's only momentary in the sense that if you can't back that up, it might be the
oh,
factor
yeah,
that
course.
Gets you noticed.
Of course.
But if you can't back it up, you won't stay there.
Agreed.
You won't.
Agreed.
Yeah, so that's sort of...
But it's a very important factor that I think a lot of people just dismiss.
I don't think it's as important as you think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
I do.
I don't.
I do. Oh, I do.
Because if you can't back it up,
we're talking about two different things, though.
Well, what are you talking about?
I'm saying that it never leaves the table. There's a reason why certain people have certain things. Look at sports, right? Sports,
yeah.
In theory, should be a very cut and dry thing. The best player should have this endorsement because he's the best player. Well, that's not true. It's not true. You also have to be handsome, okay? Tom Brady is not the best quarterback right now, but he is definitely the most handsome. Therefore, he is the most endorsements, okay? That informs everything else about the NFL.
Yeah, I think from that...
That's not good or bad.
No,
that's just
I agree
how
with
it
you.
Is.
I think in that scenario, it's true, but yeah. I wouldn't say it's an everyday scenario because that's a media-based thing, and in media, we are very biased that
Agreed.
Way. I think if you meet somebody in a bar and you start talking to them... Within 5 minutes, if they're super cool or funny or whatever, mm-hmm. you're going to be like, you know what? The looks thing is not, it's just not hanging with me anymore. So I'm talking everyday life.
I disagree again. As a bartender, you can see it as a way certain people talk about other people in the bar based mm-hmm. on how they look.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of people that are in decent shape talking shit about people they don't know in the bar.
Right. I don't get where you're going with that.
I know a lot of people, a lot of barflies, that as soon as somebody that comes in that doesn't look like them comes
right.
in the bar, they're like, fuck that guy or fuck that girl. They think they're X, Y, and Z, and it's usually someone that they would consider more attractive than they are. And they classify them that way.
Right.
That's
what
everyday
I'm saying.
Life.
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is if those two people engaged...
Yeah.
And... This person A, who's pretty,
of course,
came off as more authentic than
of course.
Then that person would be like, oh, that's not what I thought.
Of course,
that's
but
what,
you're
you know.
Assuming that everyone's going to give a 5 minute conversation.
No, I'm not assuming that. I just think that there are barriers that you have. So who gives a shit about that person
Agreed.
Who's doing that?
Well,
if you're
talking
about
everybody
hooking up,
I'm not talking about hooking up.
No, but I mean, those are the scenarios that right that pretty.
Well, I think everything
is an entree to
jobs, information.
Agreed. But again, with a job thing,
yeah.
If you can't back it up, you
sure.
won't stay in
agreed.
That job.
Agreed. Completely agree. Yes.
Same with hooking up with somebody or a relationship.
Agreed. Completely.
If they can't back it up, it doesn't
of course.
Matter.
Of course.
So that's all I'm saying.
So that's we were partially in agreement. You're currently married.
Yes.
What does your husband think of this?
He loves it.
Yeah.
He's super excited.
Okay.
And he reads everything that I put out there. So he's like, you know, 100% behind all
he
of it.
He knows. He probably knows way more about you than you know about him. It's inevitable. He's not a writer.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that
yes.
weird?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No.
He's not a 9-to-5er either.
He's not.
He's got a job.
He does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. It's a job of authority.
Yes.
Do you think you were drawn to that because of the hippie parents thing?
It's
not an office job either.
Yeah, no, it's not an office job. I definitely like a manly man,
yeah.
you know.
And it's not a job that your ex-husband had.
No.
Does that make you more drawn to that?
Definitely.
Okay.
But I've always, my ex-husband was in the corporate world.
Exactly.
Much like I was. And
yeah.
so I've always been after that, and that's probably very,
uh-huh.
you know, Freudian. Not interested in 9-to-5ers
that
for my
sense.
Romantic place. I went
of
for
course.
Bartenders
yeah,
and, you know, like, not complete opposite of where my world was.
But how does one go from corporate to actually being a writer?
You start putting your pieces out there for magazines and things like that.
But
right?
wait, why did you write pieces for magazines? What was the impetus?
Everything was to get this book sold.
Why did you want to write the book?
Because I've always wanted to write, always.
When did
always.
You start?
When did I start as a writer?
Yes.
Seriously, 2007.
So not that long ago.
Not that long
That's
ago.
That's very impressive.
But
so
I,
just within
yeah.
6 years.
Yeah.
You made everyone else that didn't get a book published in 6 years feel like a real loser. That's
that
impressive.
Should be about the time it takes
6 years?
5 years.
But you were starting on one. You knew from the start you wanted to write one specific book.
Yes.
Okay.
But I took some detours and some, you know, fictional short stories and things like that. But yeah, it was always, this was always the book I wanted to write.
Why?
Because it was what I was drawn to, is writing about these, what I call defining moments. You know, that these are the moments that, like, you learn something from, or you're like, no shit. It's a breakthrough thing, you know? And
do you have any of those left?
Yes.
You don't think it goes away with age?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
When was the last one of yours?
They're all, oh gosh.
You have a lot of big things going on right now, but it feel, does it feel like it's just, this is just how it is now?
With the book?
Yeah, or that particular? Everything. I mean, you got a lot of good stuff going on right now, and I'm assuming that in 2007, if you knew these things were going to happen, they'd feel like a huge deal. But now it's the way you've ramped it up. It's been a slow pace. It's like you're kind of expecting these things to happen now.
I am.
That's not really a defining moment then, is it?
No, it's not a defining moment. That's, but it's a weird bubble to be in, I think, where it's you feel like you want, humility is important to me, and so feeling humility around that stuff, it's you're like, oh my God, this is happening, and then but then you think, yeah, well, it should be happening. Yeah. I've spent 5-6 years on it.
Yeah, you put in the work.
Yeah.
So what can be a defining moment for you at this point? Does it have to be an accident?
No, I don't. I think there still are defining moments yet to be had. There's a, the next time I will write a book, I want to go into fiction next, quite frankly.
Why?
Because I think there's things that you can do with your fictional characters that you can't with your real stories and maintain your primary relationships.
Oh, you mean like personal relationships?
Yeah, I think that I can talk about romantic, you know, personal relationships through fictional characters.
Yeah.
And say some things that I'd want to say to my husband, my mom, my dad, that I can't say to them now.
Are there really? Like, you have been on your, like, really? Do you go to a therapist?
Not anymore.
Okay. Would the therapist ever have said, like, why don't you just say those things?
Well, I've said those things, but I just mean that there's things I can't write about now.
And it's personal? Like, you don't want to expose that part of your personal life to others?
I really think that the... Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so I can explore that better.
Is this book okay because it's, like, in a way, like, a different person? It's been that long ago?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, with the exception of the last chapter.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a lot of younger people reading your site.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of boys reading your site. Mm-hmm. And I think the younger people, you would assume.
Yes.
But the boys, how are the boys, sorry, the males, how are the males finding your site?
You know, they find it through more word of mouth.
Okay.
You know, so, or shows that I've been in. I've found, you know, just talking about it at talks or shows, I've found guys are like, you know, this is something that really affects men too, or it's something we want to know how to talk about with the women in our lives.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You tell me a lot of people find your site through searching.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. How are they finding your site?
Yeah, they're searching it by Googling some variation of the phrase, am I pretty enough? Will I ever be pretty enough? How to be pretty when you're not? Am I pretty enough for anybody to love me?
That's sad.
It is sad.
That's really sad.
It is sad.
Do you ever think of emailing back no?
Do I ever think of writing back no?
Yeah, just see what happens.
No, never.
JK, no, JK.
Never.
Why?
Because I'm not like that.
It's a joke. It's really, we're joshing them.
I have a weird way to joke with somebody.
They'll realize they're not horrible if they can laugh at it. Throwing ideas out.
Big risk.
I'm not ready to be a father. I think it's very funny to tell a kid you're not. No, you're horribly ugly.
There's one person that I thought I would do that with, and it was a search that came in and said, am I pretty enough to be on Fox News? And that was one that I considered. I just don't know if that's the right question.
Yes, it is the right question.
It is.
You know what's good about me? I have to like gain 20 pounds in 10 years and I'll be pretty enough for Fox News as a dude. It's awesome.
No, you're right.
It's amazing.
You're right.
Why is it so great to be a white male?
Oh my God. Let me count the ways.
Seriously, let's go back to the defining moment thing. When is the last defining moment in your life? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was probably the separation with my husband.
See, it was a long time ago.
No, it wasn't. This my current husband.
You're separated?
No, we were 2 years ago.
Well, congratulations for not being separated anymore. You would have felt like a real loser if you got separated.
I would have. That was part of the thought process, frankly. But yeah, we are.
You're good now?
Yeah, we're perfect now.
Do you want to talk about that at all? That seems very personal.
It's in the book. It's
right,
the last. It's called Separation to Save the Marriage.
Sorry. Yeah. Why?
We separated because we just, it seemed, he seemed lost to me. you know?
Oh, that's sad.
And I was sort of carrying the weight in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Including financially.
Yeah.
And there's a certain point where that's, you know, that's, you've helped enable that dynamic.
Yeah.
And.
But in a way, it's kind of like you're blaming the wrong person if you feel that way.
Right. Yeah. But it's still hard to see somebody that you really, really love.
Yeah.
Go down a path.
Did he ever Google, am I pretty enough? So you separated 2 years ago for how long?
For about 4 months.
4 months. Did he not worry about if you'd see other people because you're a storyteller?
We talked about it. There were rules to the separation.
What were the rules?
You can't see or fuck anybody else.
See, this actually doesn't sound like a separation. This seems like a really cool vacation.
Right.
I've been with my wife for a whole 2 months, but we've been together for 10 years, right?
Right.
So whenever we're away for like a week or two, it's fucking awesome. And I love her dearly.
Of course. We do this all the time.
It's separate. Awesome.
My husband is going with a buddy of his for away for 4 days.
Yeah.
Starting on Saturday, I'm like, I can't wait.
Yeah.
And he can't either.
Yeah, it's awesome. I just eat steak all the every meal.
It's
That's
fine.
The only
it's
thing.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. So it wasn't a very fun vacation for 4 months.
No, it wasn't.
Your parents knew about it.
Yes.
You talked to your friends about it. Your friends knew about mm-hmm. it. Or did you keep it under...
Limited. Very yeah. limited. We kept it very, you know, not secret, but just very limited.
What was the thing that brought it back together? Or was it a thing? Was it a series of
things? Yeah. I mean, I said to him, these are the things that need to happen. He had actually, 2 weeks before our separation, put together a, you know, contract for me. He knew he was losing me, and I told him that separation was probably imminent if he didn't, like, turn his shit around.
Yeah.
And he laid out all these things, and then 2 weeks later he went down off all these things. And when I tried to keep him accountable, he got really upset.
Yeah.
He's like, we can't do this.
Did he...
And so...
What were the signs obvious, or would it have only been noticeable to a partner?
No, they were very obvious.
Like a lot, like weight gain, like...
No, it wasn't weight gain. It was sleeping
alcoholism, sleeping all the time?
Sleeping a lot.
So just depression?
Yeah,
just depression. Your general depression.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
That's sad.
It is. And so it's hard to watch somebody you love go through that, but it's also... Yeah. You start to feel like, at what point am I enabling this situation, and
yeah.
I'm not able to carve out what I need for my own life
yeah.
by continuing to enable it.
Did you separation means someone doesn't live in the house anymore. So did you go or did he go?
He went.
Where'd he go?
He went to a friend's house.
That's
of ours,
good, right?
No, it was really good. He was super positive about
good.
It. And my whole thing was, you put in the work, we put in the work together, we can turn this around.
That's good. That's a
and
very
so
Midwestern
went,
point of view.
It is, and he's from Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
so, you know,
good.
And so this friend said, I believe Jen when she says that.
Yeah.
And it took Dave, my husband, about a week to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he did, he was in it.
Good.
And we, like, sort of, you know, dated and, you know, like.
Are you worried about that happening again?
No.
Why? What makes it not?
It's his behavior. He's, like I say in the book, we didn't do a 180, but we did a 165. Like,
okay.
It's totally turned around from where it was, and it hasn't gone back, ever reverted back to the same behavior.
Are you in medication in any way?
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever not on medication? Obviously, you were not on medication. What was the thing that made you get some self-care and get some medication?
It was an inability to cope.
Yeah.
With just daily... What should be daily life.
Do you think you could have done this, the book, without the medication?
No.
Okay.
And I'm on a low dosage, let me just say.
Yeah.
And I'll just say of Lexapro.
And Lexapro. I don't
yeah.
know what Lexapro does.
It's a anti-anxiety drug.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that has...
When you have deadlines, do you take more?
No. Mm-mm.
Then why are you even on it? What's the point?
There's a...
It sounds like a cool tool to use.
It,
let's abuse it.
Well, it's a very low dosage.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, whenever you're... on some sort of drug like that,
yeah.
you have to have a sort of plan for weaning yourself off of it, right?
Are you on that plan?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I don't want to wean myself off of it yet.
Okay.
I think once I get through this heavy, like, push,
uh-huh.
that might be a time to build
won't
up.
Won't there always be a next thing?
I think I have the coping skills now.
Okay.
But I don't have the time. So the tiredness, working 20 hours a day, sleeping 4 to 5
this
hours a
night. This just sounds like legal coke. That's what it sounds
it's
like.
It's not, though.
Okay.
It's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, more less
no.
manic, more focused.
Mm-mm.
I'm asking. I'm not accusing.
Yeah.
When was the last time you weren't on it?
4 years ago.
Okay. So it's been a while. You know how you... Could you tell the difference anymore? Or is it just like... It's what it is.
You know, I'm very good at putting like a mask over myself, and when I'm in a really stressful place, mm-hmm. I can still appear to other people like I'm not.
Yeah.
But now I don't feel like I need that, you okay. know. So before, without the drugs, it would be like I can't even move. Like I am so upset. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to be able to even start anything because I'm so overwhelmed about all the things I have to start.
I understand that. I understand that.
And
so this is sort of like a, in a way, kind of like a planner. Like, you will do this now. It will help you figure that
yeah,
out.
Yeah. And then, you know, I can see within the year me weaning myself off of it.
Okay.
Because I feel like I have the skills now through therapy, too, that helped, you know.
Now, I'm asking these questions because a lot of, like, you are going to do a lot of speaking to children.
Not to children.
To me, anybody under 18 is a child. High school.
No,
stuff
no,
like colleges.
College.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Babies having babies. It's a horrible yeah. problem. So yeah. you, but yeah. still, 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're kids.
Yeah.
What are you going to tell the kid that doesn't feel like they're pretty enough or there's something wrong with them and they just hate, like they won't take anything and like therapy's for losers? Like, what do you tell that kid?
Well, you can't help somebody who doesn't want to help themselves.
Yeah.
And it's rare that I meet a kid like that in this type of session. If they're coming to this session,
true.
They're open to that sort
okay.
of stuff.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's rare you meet somebody who doesn't...
Did you had hippie parents, though. They were probably into it.
They're very into it.
That's good. Yeah. What about your husband?
Yeah, he's, you know, he's like a... Just a super open dude.
So you're surrounded by people that are like into self-care.
Not self-care. It's not
self-care. Therapy is self-care.
Oh, you know, My parents haven't gone through that.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. my husband went through it grudgingly.
Yeah.
So we are people who are definitely like, we're beyond this and stoic. And I had to break through my own sort of third wall around that.
No one. Yeah. You don't hear a lot of stories about like horrible, poor people that have just failed and everything, never been tried going to therapy. You don't hear those stories.
No.
Because they don't exist.
Right, but I was poor.
Yeah, same here. Like,
yeah.
Why would you? Yeah, then you should go to therapy.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. Right, exactly.
Yeah, whatever. Appreciate the quarter.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. Why do you want to do fiction again? Just to get things out that you can't get out and not.
Yeah, I think you can explore some different things that you can't in your life.
But more people, less people read it. Because it's fiction.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Less people read fiction than nonfiction?
Yeah.
Really?
Especially, yeah.
Where are the stats on that?
We could probably figure that out.
Yeah.
I think more people read your type of book.
I think more people like my type of book and will buy it quicker.
Yeah.
But I don't think more people read
fiction. Fine, you'll sell more copies
than
nonfiction.
No, I just think that there's things you can explore. And this is a book that took me 5 years to write because it's a 5-year analysis of your life. That is blood, vomit, sweat on the fucking page, you know what I mean? You don't want to go through that experience again soon.
Is there anything you could say on stage that would possibly embarrass you?
No.
Yeah. How long did it take you to get to that point?
A year.
That's it? Is 1 year
performing? Yeah.
Yeah.
A year.
Is there anybody that you see performing and like it's like a very stereotypical thing that you, like what's the one piece of advice you'd give that person?
To performing?
Performing, either storytelling, stand-up, whatever. Just you and a microphone and a voice.
Yeah, I think before you get up there, you need to really chart what your story arc is.
Okay.
You know, and I always, you know, my very most basic advice is always that 3-act structure. Like, mm-hmm. who are the people in the place? What are we getting into here? Mm-hmm. And what's the conflict? What's mm-hmm. the issue? And then how are you going to resolve that?
What if there's a heckler?
If there's a heckler, if you're doing a good job, then you just tell that heckler to shut the fuck up.
Does it work?
I think if you're doing a good job.
You're assuming that they're not wasted.
Yeah, but if they're wasted, then, you know,
that's fun.
You do whatever you have. Every
so
every.
You're a pro heckler.
I sort of like a heckler.
Do you really?
I haven't had enough. I've had some experience. Because, you know, I think
storytelling is
different than
what we do.
Yes.
What I do.
It
yeah.
is. Than
it's a little different.
Stand up.
Yeah.
And a lot of stand ups, I think, go up. Very, like, I don't really have any material.
Oh,
I'm just
yeah.
going to try some
you
shit
You write on stage.
Out.
It's totally
right.
different.
Storytellers are different.
Oh, I know. I've done both.
Yeah.
I understand what I'm
yeah.
going to do. I would understand it's the same for you. Would
yeah.
you do stand-up? Or is that you just have no interest?
I don't have a lot of interest in stand-up.
It's good.
I think it's braver, though.
It's all the same.
I think stand-up is more open.
We're so splitting hairs. Like, the
yeah.
only people that would notice a difference are, like, nerds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, no
yeah.
one...
Yeah.
What are you? You're on a stage with a microphone.
Yeah.
There's no one else there? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You're a speech
yeah.
maker at a certain
right.
point. This American Life, the Moth fan, obviously.
Definitely.
Did it inspire any of this or no?
Yeah, I think it does, because it creates like a community of people who are interested in hearing that sort of shit.
What's the one thing you're sick of from all those things?
From the like storytelling,
Moth, This American Life.
Oh, what am I sick of that stuff? Oh my gosh.
There's a lot of pros. There's a lot of cons. And you're in it. A lot of people aren't in it.
I don't listen to it a lot.
That's good. You'll like it more that way.
I do. Like,
yeah.
I don't listen to a lot of it.
How often do you write?
Weekly.
Okay. How many words?
4,000.
That's good. That's really healthy. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of words. Mm-hmm. That's an 800-word column a day for a work week. That's really good.
Yeah.
About what? Nonfiction, fiction, mix?
Yeah, both. And then, you know, there's just a lot of pitches that you're writing in this sort of process, right?
What was your college major?
Communications.
Where'd you go to school?
Overland? University of Toledo.
Toledo!
Yeah.
UTI, great. and that's where you met the hubby?
Yep.
That's weird.
Hubby won.
Are you going to do a reading there?
Yes.
Do they know you're an alumni?
Yes.
Are you a proud alumni?
Yes.
Do they ask you for money?
Yes.
Will you give them money?
No.
Good. Just asking. Just following.
But there's a story in the book about, a very violent act on campus that I was a part of. It's going to be weird to do that.
Oh, yeah. There. And you're going to do that one there?
I don't know that I'd read that one there, but I think, them looking into that might make a decision on whether they want me there.
Maybe.
But I know bars around that town and, I still have people who are proprietors of them.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
You always keep your bartender network close.
You talk a lot about bars. Where do you drink?
Everywhere. Literally. I mean, so many places.
Are you an alcoholic?
I don't think I'm an alcoholic.
How many do you have a night?
Oh, there's nights I don't drink.
Okay.
Yeah, but when I do drink, I drink like at least 8.
Seriously?
Yes.
Really? Like,
I want another beer right now.
I'll give you another beer. Hold on.
Yeah.
Let me pause it really quick. How many nights a week do you drink?
3.
So you're having a case of beer a week?
Yes.
I'm going to pause it right here and figure out if you're an alcoholic.
Okay.
I'm going to do that. All right, so you are an alcoholic.
Okay.
You are, we looked it up.
Confirmed.
14 drinks a week for women or less, and then you are an alcoholic.
Okay.
So that's a low, that's...
Some news.
Pretty much, I'm not going to say everyone I know that drinks, but almost everyone I know that drinks is considered
an alcoholic.
Most people,
yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But you have physical activity in your life, so it's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like a dick, because we were just talking about how I haven't finished the book.
Okay.
No, it's not okay. You're doing the live show in October again.
Yes.
And that's what I'm planning for. Yes. Jen Tisdale is going to interview you for BYT. She's currently reading the book.
Yes.
She's like, I'll read it when I have time.
Yeah.
It's August.
Yes. Yes, because we were just talking about other activities.
To be fair to Jen, she did send me the book a month ago. I think it's or 28 days ago, pretty much. Sorry.
28 days. The zombies will come now and eat.
This is a Danny Boyle film.
Yes, I box a lot, and I do, just stupid, classes, spinning and
shit
like that.
That's a lot of work. It's a lot of sweat.
It is a lot of work, but it feels dumb to be like, I'm going to,
Why is
going
it dumb?
To a spinning class.
Well, if you say anything in that accent, it's dumb. I'm going for brain surgery. Yeah, that's stupid. You sound stupid.
I don't know. It feels very yuppie to me to be like, yeah, that's true.
Why is this?
That's
what's
true.
The problem?
That's true. There's no problem. It's just an observation, I
suppose. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Do you feel guilty at all for your jobs? Do you feel guilty that, you don't have a blue-collar job? Do you feel...
No.
Okay.
No, I've had a shit ton of blue-collar jobs in my life. I don't miss it. I don't want it.
Yeah.
No, give me, pressed fucking pants and, a nice salary and benefits.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're kind of giving that up.
I am. Yeah.
Does that freak you out at all?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Are you lying to yourself? Are you?
No, because I think I have a good plan. I have a really good consulting gig right now.
Yeah.
I love what I'm doing with client right now. I'll just say, I work with the U.S. Patent and Trademarks Office. It's
okay.
A great job. I love the people.
Do they
that
know
I work
that
with.
You're doing this?
All of it. They're super behind it.
Really?
Yeah.
Have they seen you perform?
Some have.
Is that weird?
It is a little bit. It's a little bit when people, especially when people discover the videos, and they, I had one guy in the office. We were in the copy room, and he was like, "So you like to sing and dance sometimes?"
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I saw this video of you, but it was like a 5-minute conversation all drawn out. Do you like a song by Alanis? And you're just like, just say it.
Yeah.
Just say it.
Yeah.
So that gets a little fun.
Yeah.
Funny sometimes. But no, I really love the gig. It's great. So, and I only have to go into the office twice a week usually.
That's pretty great.
It is a really nice.
And you live in Arlington?
I live in Arlington.
How is that?
It's awesome.
Good.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I have a house. I have a killer backyard.
You have a house. It's yeah. weird. Like an adult.
It is,
and
it
stuff.
Is very adult.
You're a real adult.
I know. But yet I'm like 5 miles from DC. So it's.
Yeah. It's not bad at all.
It's not bad.
It's wonderful. Why do you do the live storytelling? You don't need to.
I've taken a bit of a break from it, but I did it to inform these stories because I think live storytelling mm-hmm. is a really great way to see what's landing with your audience.
Totally.
You know, you can really tell what lines are funny, what
yeah.
point, even the silences are really poignant.
Yeah.
I always try to hit that, what I like to call that Little Miss Sunshine sweet spot, you know, where it's like...
Where you kill the grandfather?
Exactly. And I have a little girl who's in pageants.
Yeah.
Now, I like to hit that spot where the laughter is really powerful because mm-hmm. you've just been through a tense moment.
Okay.
You know, and yeah. so I feel like that's where I most like to play.
That's good.
And that's where my stories have mostly, you know, gone down that path.
People should buy the book.
They should.
The book is called...
You're Not Pretty Enough.
And the website is...
YoureNotPrettyEnough.com.
You will be touring extensively. The book is out right now. You could read
yeah.
about it in Marie Claire.
Yes. And soon, The Washington Post.
Is that this weekend, I think?
It is this weekend I believe.
Awesome.
This weekend, yeah.
You're a fantastic person. You're a very nice person. You're a fantastic
Thank
storyteller.
You,
you're a good writer. I do enjoy the Sex Papers story a lot. I saw you perform that at
Hillier.
With
very, Sandra
very,
Beasley.
Very small space.
And, yeah,
very good show.
Yeah.
You will be on our Kennedy Center show on Columbus Day, October 14th. That'll be cool. And people should follow you on Twitter.
At JD Tress.
There you go. And people, do you want people to Facebook you or whatever? Or no?
Yeah, they
care?
Can. It's, you know, Facebook, You're Not Pretty Enough.
Yeah.
.com.
And if you end up on our site, it's like nice and inspiring. It's like a positive.
It is.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's like all nice on the internet.
It is. It is.
Yeah. It's called You're Not Pretty Enough, but you're like making it like, hey,
yeah.
don't feel ugly.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't stay. What do you do to get out of this? Don't
yeah.
stay in this feeling.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's amazing. That Marie Claire article shot it through the stratosphere.
Did it really?
And it was amazing to see.
Yeah. She's in the current issue of Marie Claire, the one with Nicki Minaj on the cover.
Yep.
Yeah.
It shot it through the stratosphere. So it's been really fun to see just how overwhelmingly positive people are about it.
It's shocking to see that print media could do stuff still. That's the shocking part.
Well, they put it online recently and that
oh,
helped
yeah?
too.
Yeah. I wonder if the Post is going to do more for you.
It's possible.
Probably.
It's a big profile. They're running the book cover. Mm-hmm. Like we had a private photo shoot. Like it's going to
cool.
be a big piece.
I'm
yeah.
happy for you.
Thank you.
You know what's even better than being happy for you? Mm. Being happy for you and then seeing all the people that aren't happy for you. That's like the most fun.
What's a bigger list though?
Oh, that's a great question. that's like, you're not going to know that question until you're like long dead. So you can't really enjoy that question.
I sort of want to know, though. I want to enjoy it.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know who hates me.
Yeah, that's true.
That being said, it means you're doing something right.
Yeah, no, I don't mind pushing buttons, you know what I mean?
Don't make this sound like the end of The Bachelor or something like that.
Well, you accept
I'm here to
this
win.
Race, Brandon.
Now you sound like an asshole. Does anybody like hurt their hand when they get the rose? Has there ever been like a plant where it's just like a really thorny one?
I don't feel. I would like to see those outtakes.
I
want to
see
though.
Those outtakes.
I would like.
See,
to
I don't
see
really want to. I wouldn't watch them.
No,
I'm lying. I'm not lying to myself.
I've never watched that show.
I've seen Burning Love.
I have too.
That's awesome.
That is really good. I saw Sarah Armour open for Natasha Leggero.
Inside Baseball.
It was really good stuff. Yeah.
So Sarah Armour's a good friend of the show, and Natasha Leggero does not know who we are. She's pantless a lot. Pantsless.
On Burning Love,
Burning
she
Love
is.
Burning Love quite a bit.
Yes.
She's hilarious.
Yes,
you guys
she
should
is.
Hang out.
We may sometime.
That makes sense. That would be a really good building.
I agree.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about that. Yeah. She
yeah.
could. You would open. But you would have to do, like, the Sex Papers or something that's, like, with a projector.
Yes.
And then she would go.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
We could easily do that.
Somebody make that happen.
Universe. Yes.
Well, not if you sound like that.
That's the voice I use when things happen to me. It is.
I hope nothing happens to you. I'll read the book.
Please.
All right, I'll read the book. Thanks.